Hello, Coffee House Shops listeners. My name is Freddie Gray, and I edit The Spectator's US edition. I know you're all huge Westminster enthusiasts, but Brexit is over, and the big story of 2020 is going to be the American election. So I would like to urge you all to listen to my Americano podcast, where we discuss everything that's going on in Trump world and Democrat world. If you go to spectator.co.uk/Americano, you can listen to it all.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth and the Spectator's economics correspondent, Kate Andrews. And we are going to be talking today about the government's immigration plans, which have been unveiled by the government overnight. James, can you just go through the basics of what is being proposed?
So the big news, I think, is that this closes off the economic route for low-skilled migration. This essentially is creating a point system, and the government says it's designed to encourage high-skilled immigration but remove the supply of low-skilled labour. And I think that the impact of this will be most immediately felt in the social care and hospitality sectors. And I think this is part should be seen as part of a broader shift in Tory economic thinking in recent years, which is a deliberate attempt to raise the price of labour. And you see that in the so-called national living wage, which is rising far above inflation. And I think you see one of the explicit aims behind the policy today is to encourage firms either to invest in more automation and more technology, which would boost UK productivity, or to pay UK workers more. And I think the government's desire to kind of do this as dramatically as it is doing it is a product of two things. First of all, there is a desire to say to people who were driven to vote for Brexit in 2016 by a desire to end free movement, to take back control of immigration, inverted commas, that it is happening. But my second, slightly more cynical thought is, I can't help but think that this is the government has put in a way a card back into its hand in the Brexit talks, which is by coming up with this system that says you're going to treat EU nationals the same as nationals from anywhere else in the world, you are basically saying to the EU, right, if you would like preferential treatment for your citizens under our immigration system as, you know, a labour mobility component of a trade deal, then that is going to have to be something you offer us something for in exchange. That is my opening take on it.
Kate, there's been talk in the build-up to the immigration plans being unveiled of whether they would just get rid of altogether a salary threshold that lots of figures in the Home Office have been talking about how it should be a focus on skills. But there is a minimum salary, isn't there?
There is. So they have not gone for an Australian point-style system.
No matter what they might say.
No matter what they might say, although I have seen some indication they may be dropping Australia from the general branding of the points-based system, which is quite right, because in Australia, there's actually a mechanism to get to Australia and to migrate there without having a job offer secured. That does not seem to be the case for the new system brought in by the UK today. What they're really doing here is not actually overhauling the immigration system, but expanding the system that already existed for non-EU migrants. So if you were an EU migrant and you benefited from freedom of movement, this will look completely different. But if you're a non-EU migrant, you will know that the system actually is roughly the same as it was before. You have to have a job offer to come to the UK. It has to meet a minimum salary threshold. The good news for a lot of well-educated but relatively low-skilled workers, say young people who are just starting out, is that they have lowered that salary cap to being around £25,000, down from £30,000. So if you're graduating from university, you're potentially benefiting from Boris Johnson's new expansion of the student visa to stay here for 2 years, you're getting a job with a sponsored company, things are actually looking up for you. But of course, if you're a low-skilled worker, as James highlights today, or if you're used to the freedom of movement system, this is really restrictive compared to what you had before.
Now, before we talk about how businesses are taking the news, I think we can all guess that the response isn't overwhelmingly positive. James, there is something about the system which is suggesting there will be some flexibility. So if you look at specific shortage occupations, as they say, areas such as social care potentially, where there is a shortage of staff, the salary threshold could be even lower. So 20,480, and that would include nursing, civil engineering and classical ballet dancing. Do you think that is going to, in a way, appease some businesses who are worried about some of this?
Yeah, I think there's going to... I thought under Theresa May, the ultimate sign of a lack of joined-up government was that you had the NHS, the state-run health service, advertising for vacancies, filling them with someone from abroad, who then wasn't allowed to come in because they weren't paid enough to come in. So it was a complete illogical system. I mean, this is designed to... I think if you look at this system, what you actually see in its current construction is a lot of flexibility, as you say. You know, the extra points for, you know, potential flexibility, I should say, the extra points for shortage occupations, for example. You know, what gets deemed to be a shortage occupation, and you know, how, you know, does that point score get bumped up in time or down in time? And so I think that you will see that. I think the other question, again, as Kate was saying, do you wish to expand the number of people who can, for example, scientists can come with certain qualifications, can come without a firm job offer? Do you wish to expand the number of people who can come without a firm job offer because you think they are kind of entrepreneurial people who are going to set up companies and all of that, which will benefit the economy? I think the big question, right, is this, which is, what are the effects in a sector such as social care? Because, you know, that's the sector where there's a limit to how much you can automate. And the price of labour in that sector is going to rise. That means the cost of social care is going to rise. Now, the kind of classic Sajid Javid Treasury era argument was, as you put in your icon today, was we can't do this that quickly. You need to have a kind of a grace period, of a transition period, to use the Vogue phrase, of a couple of years for businesses to get used to this. This government is saying, no, we're going to do this straight away. And I mean, again, what it is adding up to is it's another thing where this time next year, we will be in a big moment for the government, as, you know, has its policy at the borders on both goods and immigration working or not?
Just on that, James, do you think having a new chancellor will change what the immigration system is going to look like? Or was it just simply the case before that Sajid Javid was privately saying or voicing concerns of it, which were then being ignored by Number 10?
I think they have a different in emphasis on immigration. And I think if you look at it, if you look at some of the stuff that the new Chancellor has said on think tank panels and the like, his argument would be that, you know, campaigning for Leave up in Teesside during the referendum, that voters had quite a clear idea of the immigration that they were in favour of and the immigration that they had concerns about. And, you know, high-skilled immigration to come and work in the NHS was something that didn't bother voters. What they were more worried about was immigration that they perceived to be competing with them or for the same jobs or pushing down the wages that they, the price of their labour, essentially.
Kate, one of the things the government is very keen to press when talking about this new system is that immigration will go down. Do you think it will?
I think there's a good chance it will if you're basically ruling out any easy pathway for a low-skilled migrant to come to the UK.
I mean, it's just worth, I mean, there is still one pathway, which is the, you know, the family reunification pathway has not been... They're not choosing to try and line up what you need to be earning to bring a spouse in, all that stuff, with this new system.
Correct. And that's always been a loophole in the visa system, that especially for a non-EU migrant, they might have to be earning quite a lot of money to come over here, but their spouse or their child could do any given job. So that's true. That hasn't closed off. But the fact that they're basically shutting down most ways for low-skilled migrants to come to the UK means it's very likely that numbers will go down. I'm happy to see that they haven't yet instituted a cap. There have been rumours that they may do if numbers weren't to go down. But Boris Johnson has previously indicated that for him it's not about numbers, it's about skills. We've obviously heard a lot of pushback so far from businesses saying this could be calamitous, it could be very damaging. I think ruling out low-skilled workers in a lot of sectors may prove to be problematic. From the economy perspective, having a list of either shortages in occupations or special occupations that you want to give preference to can be really problematic if the government is making up that list. And I think businesses are quick to highlight this. Why is it that the ballerina gets preference over the jazz, you know, musician or whatever it may be. You could absolutely understand why social care and healthcare workers would be on the shortest list, but what about areas like hospitality? It's not particularly obvious that migrants have been taking those jobs from British workers who are desperate to get into that sector. So there will be, I think, some pain here, and it may be very, I think it's, there's a good chance we'll see the government will add to that shortages occupation list as we actually do get some shortages.
Okay, do you think it's feasible that the government is going to be able to get this system ready to go for January?
I think it is feasible that it could be ready to go in the sense that they're expanding a system that they already have. They're not creating something from scratch. The big question mark is what if there is going to be a new process for businesses becoming sponsored and bringing migrants into the country. What is that process? How bureaucratic is it? And how much is it going to cost? Because at the moment, it can take businesses months to become sponsored and months to get a migrant into the country through, you know, lots of technical hurdles that are too boring to talk about on a podcast, but it can take a very, very long period of time. And if you need a worker to come in overnight, seasonally, whatever it is, even if they're on the shortages list, it can still be a bureaucratic process. So it strikes me that in order to get this to work, it is possible to do it in less than a year, but they're going to have to simplify that process. That might actually make a lot of businesses quite happy. Not completely happy, but they already struggle with that now, and that might be a bit of a giveaway.
And finally, James, we've had a few business lobby groups make noise this morning, voicing some concern over the plans. I don't think it's particularly shocking in the sense that we know businesses are concerned about the effect of limiting low-skilled labour coming from other countries. Is there, in your view, a chance that pressure from businesses will alter Number 10's course?
I would be very surprised. I think pressure from consumers might alter Number 10's course, but not business. I mean, Number 10 knew that the business lobby groups weren't going to like this policy, and they pressed ahead with it anyway. I think there is a view, you know, that essentially one of the reasons that the UK has such a productivity problem is that, you know, while as in countries where labour is more expensive or the labour market is less flexible, companies have invested in machinery and automation to speed up processes. Here, UK firms have responded by just hiring more people because of free movement. There's a very large pool of willing and hard-working labour that they can call on. And so I think that is built in. I mean, there is a seasonal workers thing for agriculture. So I think the idea that the kind of crops are going to go unpicked is perhaps the wrong example. I think the bigger question is, you know, how does social care and hospitality adjust to this shift? And, you know, what does it do? And can it adjust fast enough? And then, again, as Kate was saying, that, you know, this is... we've got two...
I've got two syllables, so we'll be okay.
It is this question of, you know, again, the government is betting a lot on its ability to get ready for these new systems, you know, in 10 months' time. I think it's 45 weeks, you know, this system has to get up and running. And at the same time, it's trying to get a new customs system up and running because the UK will be fully outside the single market and the customs union on January the 1st, 2021. And so even if all of this war of words between Downing Street and the EU calms down and they negotiate an FTA, free trade agreement, you're still going to have friction at the border in that scenario. So I think the kind of question is, you know, the government is essentially trying to apply deadline pressure to the British administrative state to get these systems up and running. I think, you know, the history of government IT systems makes you think that that is a tough ask.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Kate. And if you'd like to hear more about immigration from at least one guest on today's podcast, in Kate Andrews, do come along and get your ticket to an event we are having on the 25th of February asking, is it time to offer amnesty to Britain's illegal immigrants? It is at the Soho Hotel, quite a swanky venue, I'd like to point out. And on the panel, we have a range of guests, including Fraser Nelson and David Goodhart. I will be chairing the debate, so I will also be there in some form. And if you would like to buy a ticket... my form is a chair-like form, much like today's podcast. So if you would like to buy a ticket, just go to www.spectator.co.uk/amnesty.